You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Hello and welcome to I'm Cast, where we've got a real treat today, Ginge. I'm going to say it, if I had to name my all-time West Ham 11, Matty Efrinson would be on the left wing. Welcome to I'm Cast, Matty. What an honour to have you here. 195 games for West Ham, 6 years. What times, Ginge? What times they were?
Yeah, and one of my best mates in football.
Oh.
Had some great times, mate, and we on and off the pitch. And first bumped into Matty when I signed 2005, I think you'd been here a couple of years before that.
2003, I think.
But just good times, good dressing room and memorable moments.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to you two maybe two-footing each other, because I know you've got plenty of dirt on each other.
No dirt.
Let's see if I can tease it out through the course of the podcast.
Yeah, maybe.
Matty, let's go right back to the start of your career, because you started at Peterborough, right? But I think you've been spotted at Falmouth under-14s.
Yeah, in Falmouth, yeah. It's a team called Morton Smith, and we had a really good team. I'm still close to quite a few of the lads I played with, went to school with there. James Miller being one of them. He'll be happy for that shout out. Ginge knows him as well.
He's a character.
And yeah, just got spotted randomly playing down in Cornwall in the Sunday League. I think it was under 11s at the time, and got invited to come up to Peterborough and play there. Just really different scenario that I didn't expect, but it was led to what happened in the future.
Yeah, were you unbelievable at that level? Were you kind of hat trick every game kind of kid?
Yeah, I think I scored 8 in one game from what I can remember. Yeah,
we were good.
We were cleaning up at that level, and obviously enjoying it. That's all it should be at that age, and loved every minute of it. And yeah, it ended up getting on a train every weekend up to Peterborough, meeting up in Bristol, and then getting the train to King's Cross and up to Peterborough and playing every weekend up there.
Did anyone else come through? Did anyone else make pro from that team in Cornwall?
No.
I remember you saying you had a good team down there.
No, we did. And they all played at a decent level, like Step 4, Step 3, Step 2, Conference South, Step 2. So they've gone on to play at a decent level, but yeah, none of them
You're a big name at Peterborough. I remember hearing about you like years before you signed with West Ham. We were chatting to Bobby Zamora, and he speaks so fondly of his time in the lower leagues. Did you have a good time at Peterborough?
I think it was the best thing for me. I've got to be honest, I loved it. It was tough. And I remember on my debut, we played Brentford away. Brian Statham was a right back. And I made my debut at 15 years old for Peterborough in the Football League. And I megged him within 2 minutes and went past him. And he said, if you do that again, I'm going to break your legs. And he was an experienced player. I've played for numerous clubs and had a really good career. And that comment threw me back a little bit. I thought, wow, I'm in it now. Yeah.
And he's a kid as well, really.
Yeah, I was a kid. And that grounding at an early age definitely helped me, I think.
And Barry, we were chatting just before we started, but Barry Fry seemed to be quite a positive influence for you.
He's brilliant. He's yeah, he loved me and Simon were the up and coming ones, and he definitely saw some pound signs in his head,
some pound notes in you.
But no, he helped us. He helped my family. Yeah, Si's family as well, to be fair to him. And he was brilliant. He brought us through, but ultimately knew we were going to move on and go on to bigger and better things.
That's where I got my sort of grounding in the lower leagues. I remember I was 16 maybe, and I travelled with Cardiff to a pre-season friendly called Weymouth, and I was actually playing up front. And yeah, I know. Everyone laughs when I said I played up front.
You always said you played up front.
I did.
I was quite up about 10 times on this podcast.
I mean, I still fancy myself as a centre forward. And I was quite prolific when I was younger, centre forward. But anyway, young lad, silly Barner, thought I could play a bit. Went to Weymouth in a pre-season friendly. And I'm playing up front. And the first goal kick came up. And from behind me, I heard killer's ball. And he's just elbowed me, clean in the back, knocked me out, done. And I think that just going... That story on the back of what Matty says, I think Bobby said the same, Matty said the same. That grounding of lads who've come through the lower leagues, I think it made me the player I was.
Yeah.
It was tough.
You were learning on the job.
Doing it at a really young age as well. But you were, there was defenders that have played a lot of games and experienced Football League players, and that they were obviously reading the papers and reading all the press and stuff that goes alongside that. And thinking, oh, these are the next up and coming ones, but they wanted to do something about it, and you had to be on your toes.
Do you think, like, that lower league is such a good grounding for a young player, because especially these days where you could be in the PL2 and you're playing football a certain way, it's quite a high standard. But as you drop through the leagues a little bit, it's a bit more rough and ready. Maybe the players aren't as good and they rely maybe on threats and mental resilience a bit more, you know? Is that actually, do you think, even in this day and age, a really good grounding for a young footballer?
I think it is. The PL2, the standard's unbelievable. Some of the games that you see, the technical and tactical ability of players is frightening. But I do think the young players need a bit of that as well. And I think it's really valuable for your future and what you go on and do in your career. It definitely helped me. And you look at players like Harry Kane and the amount of clubs he went through. And the player he is now. I mean, that's just one example. There's probably another 20, but I think there's real value to it, definitely.
Yeah. So towards the end of your time at Peterborough, I believe you had a trial at United, Manchester United for a bit.
And Spurs, yeah. This is a great story, to be fair.
How did that come about?
Again, Barry was obviously totally got many contacts. we got invited to go and train at Man United. So Alex Ferguson had been on the phone. There'd been a lot of interest around us. I was 17 at the time, I think. And we genuinely thought we were going to go up and train with the under-18s or under-21s or 23s, whatever it was at the time, reserve team. And we went up to the cliff, rocked up. We had sponsored cars at the time with our names written all down the side of it. Peugeot 306s. we rocked up and got introduced to the manager first and foremost. And, Sir Alex Ferguson, they just won the treble. It was a season after they won the treble. And he said, to the kit man, can you show them downstairs and where they're going to get changed? And we were sat next to Roy Keane, Teddy, Gary Neville, and me and Si were looking at each other like, what's going on here? Thinking that we're going to train again with the younger age groups, train with the first team. And it's an experience like neither you can have as a kid at that age. It was frightening, to be honest with you. We did boxes or rondos to start, and two youngest go in. That was me and Si. We had Skulls and the likes on the outside. We were in there for 10 minutes. We couldn't get the ball.
couldn't get
the ball. Because usually the first one that wins it goes out and then the next one comes in. We couldn't get the ball off them. It was an unbelievable experience. 2 or 3 days, I think, we were there. We had our first league game then on the Saturday. Went on the Tuesday, I think it was. And went back, but played a friendly against Boca Juniors. Sir Alex was watching up in his office. He had a big glass window where he could see out, and you see him up there watching. And did all right, but it wasn't to be. And then we moved in January, but it was an unbelievable experience, something that I'll never forget.
Wow. So then you end up at Spurs.
Mm.
And how was, who was that? Was it Glenn Hoddle would have been manager?
George Graham. Yeah.
How was that as an experience like that? It seemed a frustrating time.
Yeah, it was a frustrating time for me personally. But again, moving there, New Year's Day, they had Liverpool at home. we were on the front cover of the program. Again, you know, Si was from Haverford West in West Wales. I was from Cornwall, two young lads, not really knowing about the bright lights of London and what it entails, and turning up, seeing our faces on the program, going into the stadium, watching them play against Liverpool, my position, watching David Ginola, it was unbelievable, thinking I've got absolutely no chance. It was a daunting experience, but one that ultimately I think made me, but it took a while to get accustomed to everything. And yeah, the 3 years I had there were frustrating for me, I think, and didn't particularly enjoy it, but I think it helped me further on in the career.
Was it easier doing it with Simon though? It must have been.
It was,
because like, obviously how close you are and still are.
Yeah, it was. It definitely eased the pain, so to speak. Different times, yeah. Difficult times. Two young lads that have coming from backgrounds that are quite remote and there's not a lot going on, to doing what we did at Peterborough and then going to London to a massive, you know, surroundings, the Premier League and everything that comes with. It was daunting, but it was definitely better that we did this game.
I bet it was a bit of a whirlwind from the time you got in the first team at Peterborough to all of a sudden at Tottenham.
It was, yeah.
I bet time flew by, didn't it?
It did, but then we made our debuts at the end of that season. Come on against Liverpool at Anfield, made my full debut against Man United, ironically, at Old Trafford. Against that same team, and you're thinking, what's just happened? Yeah, it was crazy, but brilliant times looking back on it now, amazing.
Yeah, so summer of 2003, obviously West Ham just been relegated, and it seemed as though you wanted to leave and you wanted to kind of, you didn't mind dropping down a level. Was that the case?
It was, yeah. I'd come to the end of my time there where I thought Glenn Hoddle was manager, brilliant tactician and, you know, great football mind, but I just didn't feel like I was getting a fair crack with Glenn in charge. And Christian Ziga was left wing back at the time. Glenn was playing wing backs, and we started off the season before I left where Christian was injured, and I started off really well, and I think the team were second or third in the league. And then Christian Ziga came back from injury and he put him straight back in, and I thought, I'm not going to get a fair chance here. It just hit me straight away. So I was looking to get out as quickly as I could, and the opportunity came here at West Ham. Spoke to Glenn Roeder, and yeah, it just felt right.
Yeah. You were part of a swap deal with Freddie Canute, and I wondered, do you ever like see each other on the way out?
As you're passing the corridor.
Pass in the corridor?
No, we didn't.
You never met him?
No, never met him. Obviously, yeah, he went the other way, but it worked out well for me in the end, definitely.
You felt like such a West Ham player. I don't even know how to describe that sensation, but you just seemed to slot in straight away. I think you were hammer of the year that first season.
Yeah.
And a hat-trick against Wimbledon. I mean, did you feel like you just settled in so well?
Yeah, it was strange. It did. It just felt, right. It felt like this was the club I was meant to be at and where I was going to get my chance and a chance to prove myself. Because obviously I'd made that jump from League Two to the Premier League and to get back to the Championship. I thought, right, I had a hunger within me where I thought, I've got to prove myself now. And West Ham was a perfect club to do that. It was, that first season, albeit we didn't get promoted, was personally, I felt like I played some of my best football.
It felt like, as a fan, that first season, when I think back, like we never quite hit our stride. What did it feel like on the inside?
And I don't think we did. I think you're right. I think we had the basis of a good side, but I think there was a little bit of turmoil within the playing squad in terms of players that wanted to move on. Probably some extra quality we needed to get in. And I think that manufactured itself over time. But yeah, that first season, because of everything that had happened from the Premier League season beforehand, I thought it was just difficult. The club was in a transition period. But ultimately, we got there in the end and got promotion the season after.
Yeah. Three managers in that first season. Glenn Roeder, obviously. Sir Trevor Brooking comes between before Alan Pardew. How did you find working with Sir Trevor?
He was brilliant.
Was
he? He was brilliant, honestly. Obviously, it was unfortunate with Glenn and what happened. But when Trevor came in, he just gave a calm and influence. Obviously, that's his persona. That's his everything that he's about as a person. But yeah, he was really good. I really liked working under him. And until Alan Pardew came in, it was a really good period. The players were happy.
Was he coaching? Trev?
Not really. Oh, no.
I couldn't picture him out on
the
grass.
Kind of Alex Ferguson style, looking out the window.
He just oversaw everything. But he did it in the right way, and when he spoke, you listened. He's just one of them people that he's got a room, obviously everything he's done in the game and how highly he's thought of at this football club, but he certain persona about him that was really, you respected it straight away.
The rumour I heard around the time was that the players wanted Sir Trevor to stay on. Was that the case?
I think it was. I think, if you'd have to ask all of the players, that they would have happily worked under him, definitely. Because although he didn't do much of the coaching, he had little inputs here and there. The way he dealt with the players, just his, the respectfulness and the way he dealt with people was really impressive, really impressive.
I can well imagine that, isn't he? He's got an aura, isn't he?
I don't think I've ever seen him cross. No. I couldn't imagine him getting the ump at all. No. Do you know what I mean? As a manager.
Yeah.
He's unbelievably nice.
So that first season, even though it is a bit frustrating, of course, we do get in the playoffs. And I've got to talk about the one night that I'm sure all West Ham fans want to talk to you about, which was the first time we got to the playoffs in 2004. Ipswich, semi-final, second leg, 1-0 down from the first leg. We need 1-0 to kind of level the tie, 2-0 to win the thing outright. And I think it was 0-0 half-time, quite a frustrating first half. And then Matty, you come out in the second half in an atmosphere that is just crackling and score one of the greatest goals I've ever seen at Upton Park and create scenes of absolute bedlam. What are your memories of that night and what that atmosphere and what it was like?
I must have watched that goal back about 800 times.
It's an absolute worldie.
My one annoying thing about it is that there's not enough camera angles of it. There's not enough Someone needs to really boost the HD-ness of it. The clips on YouTube.
Cutting off the right, banged it, left foot, top
played
bin, wasn't it?
Short corner with Mark
Short
Carrick
corner,
just hit it.
Just
that wasn't worked on, by the way. No, no chance. But it just happened. And even you speaking about it there, just a moment that will live with me forever, weirdly, for whatever reason. Just the feeling in that stadium when I scored that goal, watching it back and the reaction from the supporters under the lights and the bowling, everything. It's just
perfect.
The perfect moment. The perfect moment.
Yeah. We hadn't had, I'd say as West Ham fan, we hadn't had a game of that magnitude for a long,
I think
long,
that's what
long
it was,
time.
Wasn't it? It was like the build up to that game as well and everything alongside that. It was, like you said, the moments that West Ham fans had in recent years up until that game hadn't been great. And I think everyone was looking forward to that game. And, to produce that moment was just incredible.
Best goal?
I think it has to be, yeah.
For the importance of it in that as well.
I think it has to be.
Can I have a quick word on Pards around that time? Because I think he was responsible, I think, for just getting the atmosphere 10% even louder. I remember he was wearing a t-shirt that said more than just a club. And he introduced, he had someone sing Ness and Dormer before the game and it was like a geezer coming out of a trumpet. And that.
He could put on a show of Pards,
I don't know. As a fan, you're like, how has he done this? But what was he like in the dressing room? How did he amp you up as players? Or did he have to calm you down, if anything?
I remember the first conversation I ever had with him. It was his first game when he took over and I was injured and I was in the change room while the players were out warming up and I just had some treatment and I came in and he went, I'm going to build my team around you. And for a player to hear that, albeit it might not be true, he might be talking nonsense, but to hear that, and I was one of those players that needed to hear that, it's incredible. And I thought, I want to play under, I want to work for you, I want to do well for you. And he said a lot of things around that as well. But he had me, the day he got sacked, I texted him straight away and I said, us as players have got to do better. I don't think he was the only reason that he lost his job. And I had a really good relationship with him. I love working under him. We had some really successful times. He was a good manager.
We speak about Pards quite a lot.
I know.
Because of the players we get on. But I loved it. I think you've just said it there. Pards was the first manager. I know I'd been playing lower leagues. He was the first manager that proper coached me. I've said it before, the sessions he used to put. I remember he used to take us back four and all that. And he had a good dressing room as well. But he also, I think you had the balance perfect, didn't you? Because we were playing really well, did really well that first year when I came, not the first year Matty was here or the second year. But he had let us enjoy ourselves, but we knew as players that we really liked what he was doing and the way he was coaching. So we sort of made sure we were playing well and training hard because we knew that he'd let us have a bit of fun as well. So I think he got the balance perfect.
And he was a good coach.
He was great.
He was.
Yeah,
underrated.
On the grass, he was brilliant.
Like obviously, he's been on and done other things, but he was a good coach as well. Mm. And really enjoyed my time.
Yeah,
really enjoyed it.
God, everyone says nice things about Pards.
Honestly, he was brilliant. He really was at that time. When I first came, it was just a good place to be, and it all come from sort of the platform that Matty and the boys the previous year had sort of laid down, and Pards was a big part of that.
So you said you watched the playoff semi-final against Ipswich about 100 times. How many times have you 800. Watched the playoff final against Crystal Palace 2001?
Not once. Not at all. Genuinely not once. One of the worst games of football I've ever been involved in. That was going from that high to that low was tough in a short space of time. We just didn't turn up on the day, unfortunately. And I don't think either team deserved to win the game.
Was it Neil Shipley scored the goal?
Yeah,
that day, didn't he?
Yeah. Just a really, really flat moment from the highs of that game on that night and what that entailed to then performing like we did in the final was devastating, really. I remember that took a while to get over.
Did you have any sense that we weren't going to perform? Like, before the game, did you have a sense that something wasn't right or not at all?
No, I didn't. I think maybe we over-celebrated in terms of everything that went on after the game on the pitch against Ipswich in the playoff semi-final. I think we maybe got carried away of ourselves a little bit, which I think you can do because you spoke about it, the build-up to the game and everything that Pards did and the T-shirts and the stuff beforehand. Maybe we thought we'd done it there and then when we hadn't. But there's no excuse for performing the way we did in that playoff final. We were awful.
It's funny because I would have agreed with you until I watched the highlights recently. And I actually thought we were the better team, I thought, and we should have had a penalty. And there's a few things I'd kind of forgotten. I mean, yes, you're right, it's a scrappy game, but we weren't as bad as I remembered us being.
We weren't as good as we were against Ipswich.
Oh, nowhere near. Yeah.
That was the biggest thing for me, because I genuinely think all the players that will say the same thing, I'm sure, is that we were that good in that second leg. We thought there's no chance we're losing this final.
Yeah.
There's no chance whatsoever. And we just didn't perform to those levels. And that was the most disappointing thing. So maybe we weren't as bad. Like I said, I've not watched it back. So I don't
know. Bring myself to watch it.
Save yourself 10
minutes.
Yeah,
exactly. but yeah, it was just disappointing. It was gut-wrenching to lose that playoff final.
And so we go into the second season in the Championship. And I would say this time, because of the parachute payments and everything connected, there is so much more pressure almost on that second season. Did you feel like that going into it, like straight away in the August?
We did. And probably felt it tenfold in the playoff final, you know, against Preston, getting to that point. So there was a build up throughout the season, then getting into the playoffs and then getting to the final. But the pressure that was felt, I think, throughout the whole squad for that playoff final was huge.
Was that pressure, was it ever mentioned about, that you talk about clubs coming up, have to come up, West Ham probably did have to come up at the time. Was it ever mentioned about like people losing their jobs and that around the club at the time? Was it that bad, do you think, if you hadn't come up?
Yeah, I don't think it was mentioned, but the players knew it.
Knew it, yeah.
Yeah, I think everyone knew it around the club that we needed to win this game and therefore the pressure that us as players felt was massive. It was big. It was the second season back at the Millennium Stadium. And we knew we couldn't lose that game. We knew it. And there's some sleepless nights, definitely.
I'm getting nervy again just thinking about
it. I am a little bit as well.
But one thing Pards did that I thought was a really smart move looking back is like the experience of Chris Powell, Malky Mackay, but also Teddy Sheringham. Did that experience give you something that maybe you didn't have the year before?
I think so. And then took what I spoke about earlier about that transition bit where just there was players that wanted to move on and stay in the Premier League and then recruiting the right people back in to help the squad. I think Pards did that perfectly. I've got to be honest. You know, players like Teddy with his experience and what he's done in the game, and he was still a brilliant player at that time, definitely helped the group. because we had some young, excitable players within the squad.
Excitable. Love it.
Yeah. You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, did a lot of work and, that word.
Teddy just calmed them down at the right time. And the other senior players did, as you just mentioned there. So, yeah, that was really important, I think.
And then heading into the playoffs, it's funny when I look back, because I was way more confident the year before when we got in the playoffs than I were this second time around. We kind of just snuck in right at the end.
We
hadn't played particularly well towards the end of the season. I remember, I think it was Brighton away we'd played and the fans were kind of going at the players. I think it might have even just been a 0-0. But heading into that playoffs, we had Ipswich again. And I think we went, was it 2-0 up at Upton Park quite quickly? And they fought back to 2-2. Mm. And you head to Portman Road thinking, well, this is going to be a tough one. And it's actually one of the greatest West Ham performances of the modern era.
Just all come together that night, I think. We were... did Marlon score?
Marlon.
Bobby
scored. Bobby,
yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
No, it was a brilliant performance. I don't think many people fancied us that night in terms of what happened in the first leg. Whereas the year before, everyone thought we'd probably beat Ipswich in the second leg. It was roles reversed, really, I think, in the second leg at Portman Road. And brilliant. You're right. It was an unbelievable performance and that gave us the momentum, albeit I think we learned a little bit from the previous year that we didn't get too carried away. I think if you look at the celebrations in that game after, I don't think it was as vociferous as it was previously. So, but a brilliant performance, definitely.
And then the final, you setting up the winner for Bobby Zamora. Can you give us a sense of what it felt like to set up the winner, but also what was that sensation like at full time?
Relief, honestly, just pure relief. That's all I felt. I didn't feel elation, didn't feel joy. I just felt relief that we got to that point and got the club back in the Premier League. There was obviously pride and everything that comes alongside that in terms of setting the goal up for Bobby. Seeing his movement literally in the last millisecond, I'd have seen him check quickly. So I thought I had to, from the cross, cut it back slightly and he's put it in the back of the net. And the emotion was relief, but an unbelievable feeling at the same time to be back there at the Millennium Stadium and right the wrong, was brilliant.
How was Pards after the game? Can you remember?
I actually don't.
He would have been lively in that.
Yeah, no, he probably was. He probably was
lively.
I actually don't remember what he was like.
Dancing just, somewhere in the corner.
Yeah, he was. I'm sure he was, but yeah, just it was an unbelievable feeling.
And then you had an open top bus parade. Of course, we wouldn't have one for a long time after that. But what was that like?
Yeah, that was surreal. I've got to be honest, because there was a lot of players within our squad that felt like they should be playing in the Premier League. So we were like delighted to be there and finally back there. The open top bus parade for a playoff final. You know, I'm looking at what the boys are doing now and winning European trophies. That's granted, definitely. But I think it was the case that we've not had much success for a number of years and the club just wanted to promote that and celebrate it. And yeah, loved it.
All right, West Ham fans, one way you can support Ironcast and help us rocket up the charts and beat off the competition from other official football clubs podcasts like Chelsea and like Spurs is to get a 5-star rating or review from you. Support me and Ginger on the podcast, chuck us a 5-star rating and review and help us rocket up the charts where West Ham belong, at the top of the table. Back on with the show. And then we bring in the big guns. The Premier League money rolls into town.
You looked at me.
We go to Cardiff. We get the Ginger Pele, Danny Gabbadon. And what was it like, Matty, going into the first season of the Premier League? Because it just felt like, I don't know, it'd always been like the players had been frustrated in the Championship and things weren't clicking. But I felt like success breeds success. And once we were in the Premier League, these players who've been playing in the Championship suddenly like they took on Premier League personas. And it's almost like that promotion just gave everyone another 20% that wasn't there the year before.
Sign-ins make it, though.
So, the competition.
Big sign-ins make it, don't they?
You and Gav rocking up, definitely. I think from the playing squad that we had before, when we got promoted, like I just alluded to, we had something to prove. I had something to prove. Not worked out for me at Spurs. I knew I was good enough as a Premier League player, but I wanted to prove that. You had players like Nigel, Rokoka, Marlon, Anton, you know, they they wanted to prove themselves as well. We had a young squad, but a squad at the right age, you know, to go and prove themselves. And I think that's what you saw early on in that first season.
We
back just in used the to Premier go.
We had no fear either.
No
did we?
Fear
we
whatsoever.
Just went everywhere and just thought we're just going to win. You know, because we were young, teams. Just played with no fear. Yeah.
It was. I remember the first game we played at home was against Aston Villa, wasn't it? Yeah. We won 3-0.
Blackburn.
Was it Blackburn? Sorry, it was Blackburn.
Was it 3-0?
3-0.
Then we had a Monday night game against Villa as well, and we beat them.
Yeah, Marlon hat-trick.
Yeah.
It just seemed a little bit of
one, proving people wrong or proving people right in some aspects. But secondly, you know, we're here to stay and we know we're good enough. There was definitely that feeling within the dressing room.
I love that, like having something to prove, like just really spurred.
I'm still not sure Matty liked me though for the or me
oh,
or
yeah?
Gabs.
You always
for the, I always think to him.
Go on.
I don't think he spoke to me for the first couple of months, me and Gabs. I did have
a, you had a silly Barnet.
Silly Barnet.
And I was thinking, who's this?
I used to dress a bit
rocking up here,
strangely. Thought I was having myself a little bit as young, come to London. Yeah,
yeah, Premier League.
Matty didn't speak
now.
To me for a bit. I was convinced he hated me for a very long time.
Didn't hate you. I promise.
Who were your big mates in that for around that time?
What? Really early on, it was Michael Carrick. We roomed together. Great lad. Like, obviously, went on and had the career he's had. And I still say to this day, one of the best players I've ever played with. Absolutely outstanding player. It was more. And then, obviously, Ginge came in.
Teddy.
I was close. Yeah, Teddy, Nobes. I was close with Nobes. Went away a couple of times and we had little breaks. I went away with Nobes a couple of times. And they were the ones, really.
Yeah. So that 05-06 is just packed full of memories. We won't talk about the FA Cup yet. What are the big performances maybe in the league that stick out for you? You mentioned some of the ones at the start, but towards the end of the season, you've got like beating Arsenal, being the last to beat them at Highbury.
That night at Highbury.
Yeah.
You was on fire that night, weren't you?
You
scored, didn't you?
Yeah, scored. Deflection. Yeah. But no, it was going in. God, there's so many. Honestly, the first few years at West Ham for me were probably the best football I played in my career. So just to pick one out. But that night at Highbury was special against that team. Obviously, they were coming towards the end a little bit, but it was the Invincibles team more or less. And again, we were that young, hungry team that wanted to prove people wrong. And we turned up that night and played some great stuff again.
Arsenal that night didn't know what hit them.
No.
Because we were all young, quite lively, put it that way. And we just
had loads of energy. Yeah. I think that was the biggest thing. And we were the last team to win there, I think, weren't we?
Yeah.
Highbury.
And then the first to win at the Emirates. Yeah.
Yeah, you played in both.
Yeah.
Incredible. Yeah. Let's talk about the FA Cup run that year that ends in the final in 2006. You played every game. How was, 3 years in a row going to Cardiff to end the season.
What a place to go.
And am I right in saying we had the same dressing room every time, or
what question that is?
There was some
I think you're right,
and there was some stat knocking about. I don't know if you remember this. I think it was the South dressing room. I'm sure listeners will be able to correct me, but there was something. The team in the South dressing room had gone on a run of winning 12 games in a row or something like that, and I think we were in the dressing room that night,
right?
And I remember that was the first time I thought we might win this.
Mm.
But actually,
this is the cup final.
This is the cup final. But we just, I don't think anyone really gave us a chance that night, or that afternoon, rather. How confident were you going into that?
Me personally, I was just concentrating on getting fit because Christian Daly done me in the 11 about 5 weeks previous at the bowling. We were doing a practice game, 11v11, and gone down the left wing. Got half a yard on him and crossed the ball, and he's come in and snapped my ankle.
Oh.
So, genuinely, my whole thought process leading up to that final was making the final and getting fit for it. Tore ligaments in my ankle. So,
can you remember when you knew you were fit for it? Was it like literally the week of the game?
I just remember Pard saying to me, I'm going to give you every single chance to get fit for this because we need you in the final.
Because Dino tells the same story. Remember, Dino done his hamstring as well, didn't he, or something? And he had a bit of a fight to get fit for it as well.
So I was in hyperbaric chambers. I was getting injections left, right and centre to make sure that I'm working noon and night to make sure I was fit for that final. So that was my whole thought process leading up to it. And to actually get out there and play was an achievement in itself for me because it was probably a 8-week injury, but I got back in 5 weeks. So I didn't even think about the game. I didn't even think about who we were playing. Didn't think about the occasion. I just wanted to play in an FA Cup final. And when I was out there, then you start to realise the magnitude of everything that's going alongside that. And obviously going 2-0 up. I had the first shot, didn't I?
You kind of set up the first, you take a shot, Reina parries it, and Dino follows it in.
Shot in the world, and then his deflection spilled it, and Dino's tapped it in. Again, we started that half unbelievable.
Yeah.
That was who we were as a team at the time. We was so much energy in the team and belief. But ultimately, it panned out the way it did. And for me, that eclipses the Palace game in terms of the feeling afterwards. It was horrific.
Do you remember being sat on that? You came off, didn't you? Like, doors being sat, we were sat next to each other, me and Matty chatting. Like,
I think 80 minutes I come off. We were 3-2 up.
Was it 80? Come off. I remember looking. It was 3-2 up, by the way. I remember looking at the clock and it had flicked to 90 minutes. And I turned to Matty and I think I said, "We've won the FA Cup." Said it.
I remember saying to you, "Can you imagine the night we're going to have tonight?"
Yeah, I remember saying about being in Faces with my FA Cup final, man, like, and it's like, oh no. Shouldn't declare that, really, because I probably jinxed it, but that conversation was had on the bench, yeah? We'd won the FA Cup.
Yeah.
Oh, man. I'm surprised you say that losing the FA Cup final was a worse feeling than the Palace game, because I thought no one had given us a chance in the FA Cup and we gave such a good showing of ourselves, but almost like the Palace game was worse because it meant a season of like another season of the Championship.
That Liverpool game was worse.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah,
I think for players of mine, you might not agree or might agree, players of mine and Matty's age, the FA Cup was everything, wasn't it? Yeah. Can you remember when you was a kid, the FA Cup, watching them all.
It's iconic.
Yeah, iconic. Watching them on the bus before they done the suits that they were wearing. Yeah. We were still young, and that was still that feeling then. The FA Cup was everything back then, even then, 2006. Certainly as a kid watching it.
Definitely.
So that feeling.
You're going to be remembered for winning an FA Cup final, I think.
Yeah.
Obviously,
remembered anyway, still because it was such a good game. Yeah.
The Preston playoff win and the playoff wins we've had in after that as well. But winning an FA Cup for this football club, I think, is special, and that's probably why it hurt me the most.
Does it still bother you? Is this the one big regret?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, definitely. It's still can't get over it. Steven Gerrard is an unbelievable footballer and probably one of the best this country's ever seen. And he was the difference between us winning the FA Cup or not. And it just wasn't meant to be on that day, but I felt like we deserved to win it. And the fact that we didn't is hard.
I still can't look at Lionel Scaloni. Can't look at him.
Can't look at
he's
him.
Won a World Cup now.
He's won a World Cup.
I wonder if he thinks about that FA Cup final in 2006.
At least he didn't knock England out though on the way to winning it. I think that would have been the end for me and Scaloni, I think. can we talk about internationals for a second? Obviously, Wales in 2016 did very well. But Matty, how did you feel about their celebrations when England were knocked out?
I wasn't happy. I wasn't happy.
I'm going to have a chance to defend myself.
Do you know
as well,
what? Right, this is the thing that winds me up. So we were watching, we were around yours. What was it, the World Cup semi-final, was it recently?
Recently, yeah.
And you and Simon Davies are there, like proud Welshmen, obviously. And, we really want you to win tonight. And then teams are scoring. And I'm looking at them in the background and they're smirking to each other. Like, no. We want you to win.
When you play, when you're Welsh, proud Welsh, and you're Welshman, and you play for Wales, whenever you're playing against England, we were always sort of like inferior to England, weren't we, for a long time. So that one in 2016.
That's in your opinion.
Well, yeah. But in that one in 2016, we were in the same group. Nobody was talking about us. It's obviously all England and all that. And Iceland knocked them out. So we may or may not have celebrated.
Dancing.
I definitely wasn't dancing.
You were. I mean, you were jumping up.
A few members of our Wales squad may have been dancing.
You were definitely
but
out there.
We had got further than England in a major competition. He was furious though. Absolutely fuming.
Yeah.
There we go. Yeah, not a proud moment, but we got further than you.
Yeah, God. So yeah, Matty, after the high of like 2006, obviously West Ham that following season struggle, we eventually come good with the Great Escape, but your appearances in the first team become a little more sporadic. And we know now, all these years later, you've spoken about it publicly, that you're in the grip of a pretty serious gambling addiction. And obviously, Ginger has mentioned to me some of the things that you went through, which I find absolutely astonishing. How did it begin for you, this gambling addiction? Because I think this is something that West Ham fans would have heard, but I don't think they would have heard the detail of it.
It just creeps up on you. Like I can't say how it definitively happened. I went to the dogs a few nights with boredom, staying in hotels, not having really roots and people around, good people around me probably. And it just caught up on me, and it just got to a point where, yeah, I was in a really bad place, and it ended up affecting the back end of my time at West Ham, regrettably for me, because I loved every minute of playing for this football club, but it got to me, and I had to do something about it.
Yeah, Ginger, would like as a teammate and a friend, could were you aware of it? Was it something that was hidden?
Yeah, I was aware of it. No, I don't think I probably ever knew how bad or deep it got, I suppose, but I was certainly aware of it. But, you know, I was probably gambling at the time as well, though. You know, no shame in saying it. I was. I don't think I was probably a good enough friend to Matty at the time to maybe ask or help. But, yeah, we was aware of it, and just sort of, it's one of those things that was never really spoke about, I suppose, was it? At the time, obviously we have since, and Matty's done unbelievable where he is now. So at the time, it was just, sort of, I blame myself a little bit as well.
When you're in the height of that, and like, from my point of view, when you're in the middle of it, there's nothing that anyone can say that's going to stop you until you get that. And people talk about rock bottom, whatever that may look like, or different words or whatever, but no matter, you know, my mum could have said something to me, I wasn't going to stop at that point. You have to get to a certain point where you have to do it for yourself and the rest of your life, really. That's the point I got to. It wasn't a nice point to get to, but it ultimately got me to where I am now. So, I'm a big believer. Like, I don't like pity or stuff like that. I put myself in that situation, so it's on me, but it is an addiction, and it can get you, and it can get you really badly. And then it's down to hopefully yourself, you know, getting out the other side and moving on with your life.
It's funny because I was researching what you've talked publicly about your gambling addiction, and the figures involved, we're talking like millions.
Yeah.
And I thought, like, you had three good seasons at West Ham, like after that, still appearing in the first team. I don't know how you functioned. Like,
me either.
I can't
you speak
really
about that a bit though, didn't you? About, yeah, it was probably the only time you said before that you weren't thinking about it.
Look, going out and training on the grass was the one release that I had, and I've heard this spoken about before, but it's so true, that there's the one time or going out on a match day was the one point where I could go, I haven't got to think about the debt I'm in, what bet I'm going to have, anything around that was the one release, albeit it was affecting my football and my performances towards the end. But that was, if it wasn't for football, you know, I would have been in real, real trouble, I think.
Oh, man. And did, like, was it affecting your everyday? Was it like waking up in the morning and it was the first thing on your mind?
Yeah. Everything. First thing on my mind when I woke up. Last thing on my mind before I went to bed. It was constant 24/7. And like I said, that hour and a half training or hour and a half on a match day was the one saving grace for me. So thankfully for football, or for myself, football was the thing that saved me, I think, because you become so selfish in terms of, you've got so many loved ones around you that want to help you. You don't want to listen to them. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing that probably hurts me the most looking back on it now, is that they were hurting probably more than I was at that time, because you become numb to any feelings or emotions whatsoever. And what I was doing to my family and my closest loved ones, that was probably the toughest thing.
Man. And then the rumour was always that you had to leave West Ham, like you had to get yourself away from London, almost like go to Stoke to almost like start again. Was that the case?
Yeah. Yeah, it was. Zola was the manager at the time. Absolutely brilliant man. Can't speak highly enough of him. And he was trying to help me. So I'd loads of back issues at that time. And he was big into yoga and stuff like that. And he was doing one-to-one sessions with Mr. Gianfranco Zola, the, you know, Premier League legend. And I wasn't really heeding or taking on any advice that he was giving me, he kind of thought, right, enough's enough and time to move on. I needed to move on as well. And it was the right thing to do. I needed to get away and just a different scenery, different way of life. And yeah, that was ultimately, I hated leaving this club, but I had to do it.
Yeah. And do you know what I found as a West Ham fan? You could tell that you addressed your issues with Stoke and your form just went through the roof and you're getting linked with an England call up at long last. But the thing that really sticks in my craw.
Oh, no. I know what's coming.
FA Cup sixth round, 2011, Stoke City versus West Ham. You have the game of your life. There's one question I've got to ask you. All West Ham fans will want to know, was it a dive for the Stoke?
Oh, penalty? Careful with your answer, yeah.
I don't know what you... I don't know how...
Yes. It was. There was minimal contact. I don't know if it was Tonks or Scotty Parker.
I think it was Scott Parker.
Yeah. But it was poor. And I apologise now. I got so much stick for that from people that I know are West Ham
please,
fans, social
the back
media.
Of, the back of the gambling. Please tell what the shout was from the crowd.
I was on penalties at the time. And I'd previously scored 4 out of 4. And I'd always gone across myself. I'm left, obviously left-footed. People hopefully will know. Across myself, keeper's left, but low, and scored 4 out of 4, and keepers weren't getting nowhere near it. So obviously I've gone down for this penalty. I'm thinking, oh my God, this is against West Ham, quarter final of the FA Cup. I'm going same side, definitely. Rob Green obviously does his homework, as all keepers do. Knew I was going that way, but I thought if I put it low, he's got absolutely no chance of saving this. But I just went a little bit higher, much higher than I probably usually would, and he saved it. So obviously everything else happens after that happens. I'm running back to the halfway line about 15 seconds later and I can hear the West Ham fan singing, he's probably bet 1-1. And I smirked myself and thought, you know what,
fair play.
So yeah, that was not one of my finest moments.
Yeah, but is it, you not agree? Like when you went to Stoke, it just felt like you were playing so good. So like,
yeah,
you loved your time under TP.
I did. Yeah, I loved it. It was the best thing that ever happened to me in terms of that time in my life, that time in my career. As much as I, 5.5-6 years at this brilliant football club, but I'd have loved to have more. But it wasn't meant to be. It was time to move on, and the time I had at Stoke was brilliant as well. And yeah, played some of my best football there. It was like the shackles had been released and I was just free to go and be the best version of myself that I could be. And player of the year, my first year again. I got something to prove, something happens for some reason. And in the FA Cup final, Europe again, as I did with this club. And good times.
And then I moved to Villa. We both lived in Birmingham.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh.
Solihull, mate, didn't we?
Solihull, yeah.
Wives close and it was perfect.
It's funny, we've had a few guests on here from the West Ham playoff final team of 2012, like Ricardo Vazte the other week. Mm. And this always comes up where Ginge watched the playoff final in 2012.
Yes.
Your stag do.
Miami. Yes.
In Miami.
Yes.
So
in a cabana, wasn't it?
In a cabana. On the yeah. side. I was extremely by drunk that day.
Yeah.
Were you cheering on West Ham?
I sent him to bed that night, by the way.
I didn't make it out.
Oh, we haven't heard that before.
I was celebrating West Ham coming up. I didn't make it out for the evening.
So were you supporting West Ham that day? And do you continue to support
them? Yeah, 100%. Honestly, I've got so much time for this football club. Even what they've, going back to the gambling stuff, the way they help me, first and foremost. Secondly, what they do for former players, ex-players now, the ambassador stuff. I've been lucky enough to do quite a bit of that. Over the last year, I'm a West Ham fan through and through, and that's speaking genuinely from the heart. And so anytime West Ham are playing, my kids all got West Ham shirts. Little Peggy, 7 years old, absolutely loves West Ham now. Whenever it's on TV, we'll watch it together. So yeah, definitely.
It's amazing the amount of players that say that, though.
Yeah,
I say it to you all the time. And we say it when we speak to the old boy. I think when you play for this club, I said it on here before and I'll say it again. When you play for this club, there's something about West Ham Football Club that as a player, you become a fan, don't you? It is what it is. You ask all the ex-players, they all still support and follow West Ham.
I love it. Now, Matty, since we've got to talk about your coaching and managerial career since, I mean, you've had spells, you were assistant at Peterborough for a bit, worked at Crawley Town, most recently manager of Colchester United. So what's next? Where do you want to be? Do you think you'll end up back at the Academy of Football?
I don't know, mate. I'm a big believer in what will be. I love coaching. Got a pro licence, like obviously done my time and got up to that point. Had my time at Peterborough in the 18s, 21s with the first team. Little bit of time at Crawley, 21s at Colchester. Obviously took the first team for a little while as well. And things just pan out the way it pans out. I'm obviously what I've been through with in my life and the gambling, etc. I'm not too fussed in terms of what happens to me because I've been through quite a lot. But I believe that the path will show its way in the end. That's just the way I think. And I love coaching. I believe I'm a really good coach, and what will be in the future will be. And whether that's at Colchester, whether that's somewhere else, we'll have to wait and see, mate. But I'd love to come back here one day and work in the academy and see what happens from there. But we'll see.
Yeah. Got plenty of old ex West Ham alumni working in the academy in a minute. Who knows? Who knows, yeah. Ginge?
Fingers crossed.
Yeah. Matty, thank you so much for being with us. I've loved this chat so much. And your story is just incredible, really, and how you've got yourself to where you are today. I'm sure wherever you go from here, it's going to be interesting.
Thank you, mate. Loved it.
Matty Everton, thank you.
Cheers, mate. Cheers.
Nice one. And thank you for listening. We'll see you again next week. Until then, come on, you Irons.
Podcast Network.